From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Wednesday's Security Council meeting at the UN in New York covered the issue of the Golan Heights and President Trump's declaration of Israeli sovereignty over it. The meeting called by Syria opened with a pair of briefings, the first from Rosemary DiCarlo, Undersecretary General for Political and Peacebuilding Affairs. Her remarks here are through a translator.
Madam President, during the 1973 Arab-Israeli War, the Syrian Arab Army crossed the 1967 ceasefire line on the Golan, known as the Purple Line, initially gaining territory. In a swift counterattack, Israeli defense forces recaptured the lost ground and advanced further, crossing the 1967 ceasefire line and occupying a salient portion of Syrian territory. The conflict quickly reached an unstable stalemate, with tensions remaining high for months. Following U.S.-led diplomatic efforts, on 31 May 1974, Israel and Syria signed the Disengagement of Forces Agreement between Israel and Syria. On the same day, the Security Council welcomed the Disengagement of Forces Agreement and, through Security Council Resolution 350, in accordance with the protocol to the Disengagement Agreement, established UNDOF. The situation in the Golan remained generally calm until 2011, when fighting between the Syrian armed forces and armed opposition groups began. In 2018, the Syrian government reestablished full control of the area known as the Bravo Side, thus reestablishing a status quo ante. Throughout this period, Israel has periodically stressed the critical importance of the Golan to its security. On 25 March 2019, U.S. President Donald Trump signed an official proclamation recognizing Israel's sovereignty over the occupied Golan. The Secretary General has taken note of this development, including member states' reactions to the U.S. decision. Let me reiterate the Secretary General's statement that the U.N. position on the Golan is known and clear. That position is reflected in the relevant Security Council and General Assembly resolutions, notably Security Council Resolutions 242 and 497. We hope that the recent developments will not be used as an excuse by anyone to pursue actions that could undermine the relative stability of the situation on Golan and beyond. We will continue to closely monitor developments on the ground and will keep the Council informed as appropriate. Thank you, Madam President.
That was UN Undersecretary General for Political and Peacebuilding Affairs Rosemary DiCarlo presenting to the UN Security Council about the Golan Heights Wednesday. Her report was followed by a report from Jean-Pierre Lacroix, who was the UN Undersecretary General for Peace Operations, and he's been handling the 1974 disengagement agreement covering Golan.
The ceasefire between Israel and Syria has been maintained, notwithstanding a number of violations observed by UNDOF of the Disengagement of Forces Agreement of 1974. They included the crossing of ceasefire line by civilians from the Bravo side, the presence of unauthorized equipment and personnel in the areas of separation and limitation, and the firing into the area of separation and across the ceasefire line. UNDOF protested to the parties all violations of the Disengagement of Forces Agreement that it observed. The incidents of missile, rocket, and other heavy weapons fire on the 29th of November, 20th of January, and 11th of February, details of which the Secretary General outlined in his report, illustrate the continued risk of escalation of the situation in UNDOF's area of operation. It is critical that the parties at all times respect the Disengagement of Forces Agreement to maintain stability on the Golan. The importance of the parties maintaining their liaison with UNDOF in the first instance cannot be overemphasized. We count on members of the Security Council to support efforts to sensitize both parties and regional stakeholders to the risks of escalation and the need to preserve the long-standing ceasefire between Israel and Syria. Madam President, allow me to turn your attention to UNDOF's incremental return and full resumption of operations on the Bravo side. Since I last briefed you in December, The mission has continued to conduct operational patrols on routes in the northern and central parts of the areas of separation and limitation. In addition, UNDOF continues to carry out assessment visits and protected patrols to vacated UN positions and observation posts, including position 85 and observation post 57 in the southern part of the area of separation. UNDOF has also conducted, for the first time, route reconnaissance patrols to United Nations Observation Post 52 through the area of separation. UNDOF also continues to make progress in the refurbishment and reoccupation of its vacated positions. The refurbishment and reoccupation of United Nations Position 32 was completed on the 30th of December 2018 through the redeployment of 35 UNDOF military personnel. On the 20th of January, UNDOF commenced a limited reoccupation of Position 37 to support engineering work related to the refurbishment of the facilities and the security infrastructure at the position. It is expected to be completed by the end of April. Following the reoccupation of Position 37, we are planning for the reconstruction and rehabilitation of Position 27 in the central part of the area of separation. During the reporting period, Observer Group Golan continued to maintain temporary observation posts in the central and northern parts of the area of separation. Allow me, however, to underline that Observer Group Golan will not be deployed at observation posts in the area of separation on a permanent basis until such time as conditions permit. UNDOF continues to regularly utilize the Kunetra crossing, which was reopened on the 15th of October 2018, to move equipment and personnel between the Alpha and Bravo sites. Pending the completion of the refurbishment of United Nations position at the Charlie Gate and its reoccupation, UNDOF military police continued to deploy at the crossing point during the limited opening hours only to liaise with the respective sites on UNDOF personnel crossings. As you will be aware, the Kunetra crossing is important in facilitating efficient and effective UNDOF mandate implementation. The completion of the redeployment and resumption of full operations in UNDOF's southern area of operation will be facilitated by the deployment to the mission of a new mechanized company in July of this year, which is planned to occupy position 85 and 68. I can reassure Council members and troop contributing countries that in the implementation of a mission's plan to gradually return to the Bravo side, the safety and security of UNDOF and Observer Group Golan personnel remain paramount. There is a continued significant threat to UN personnel in the UNDOF areas of operation from explosive remnants of war and from the possible presence of sleeper cells of armed groups, including listed terrorist groups, particularly in the southern part of the area of separation. UNDOF, in consultation with both parties, continue to review the situation in the area of separation in order to assess whether the conditions on the ground would permit the return to vacated positions in the area of separation. We remain committed to supporting UNDOF in the implementation of the necessary mitigation measures, including force protection measures at both UN position and observation posts, as well as at Camp Tiwani and Camp Fowar. The importance of a continued support to and cooperation of the parties with UNDOF is of critical importance. It remains critical that the deployment of the necessary technology and equipment to UNDOF is seamless and expeditious. The support and cooperation of both Israel and the Syrian Arab Republic remains essential in this regard. Such support and cooperation is also critical to ensure the full freedom of movement and access to United Nations positions in the area of operations, and to reduce the delays and challenges that United Nations personnel experience in crossing the technical fence to United Nations observation posts and positions. In addition, the full utilization of the Kunetra crossing by UNDOF, in line with established procedures and without any administrative obstacles, is important, in particular as UNDOF increases its operations on the Bravo side to facilitate effective and efficient mandate implementation. We continue to rely on this Council's support. Thank you.
The following are the statements that were made by Syria's permanent representative to the United Nations, Ambassador Bashar al-Ja'afari.
Shukran, Sayyida al-Rais.
Thank you, Madam President, for holding this meeting. After my government's request for an urgent meeting to study the fallout from the unilateral decision taken by the President of the United States with regard to the Syrian occupied Golan. Before reading my statement, I'd like to make a couple of observations. First, to the delegations of Security Council, I will be sending a detailed statement tomorrow reflecting my government's stance on this position with regard to the truth and the reality of the situation of UNDOF in the Syrian occupied Golan. This is a position that we revisit every 6 months, so no doubt you'll have detailed information on this. And on the extension of UNDOF in Golan. I raise this issue because our topic today is not that, but rather a measure taken by the U.S. administration against an occupied land based on what we've heard from most of you. And I'd just like to correct a term which some of my colleagues have used, not all. The Syrian occupied Golan, that is the term that one finds in resolutions and in the archives. So it's called the Syrian occupied Golan, occupied Syrian Golan, but not the Golan Heights. That's an Israeli term. It's an Israeli created term after 1967. And it's a term that dates back to medieval times when the armies occupied mountains as a strategic site. So they're trying to say that it's a strategic height that they need to control in order to be able to maneuver on the heights. But it's not heights. There are rivers, there are valleys, mountains, plains, even cities in this area. So that was my second comment.
Third.
In some meetings, and at the very moment when this meeting was starting at 5 p.m., Israel conducted air bombing, bomb strikes against the Sher Nazar area in Alep. Oh. 500 kilometers away from the Golan. So we have an airstrike, an Israeli airstrike in Alep. Material damage. And the Syrian air defenses were able to intercept some of the missiles that were launched against Aleppo. So those are the three observations I had to start with. Now, Madam President, I should read my statement. If I may, I'd like to begin by reading part of a message that came to me a short time ago this afternoon that was addressed to you, the Security Council, that is both members and the presidency. It's a little girl in the Syrian Golan. Here's her photograph. Everyone can see it. Please look at the picture of the little girl. My American colleague, I don't know if you can see this picture, but I'm trying to show it to you. So, the message from this little girl, the Syrian little girl, I just showed you her picture. She's from Golan. And she says, and I quote, "My name is Dimash Al-Hanim. I'm 10 years old. I'm from the occupied Syrian Golan, from the town or village of Mashdajnash. I live under Israeli occupation, and I say to the world that we children in the occupied Syrian Golan, our lives will not be determined by the occupying power of the Israelis. Rather, they will be determined by our dreams, by our innocence, our destiny, which we live out in the land of our fathers and our grandfathers. And our dream of freedom will remain our dream around having our motherland return to us." End of quote. Madam President, my country, the Syrian Arab Republic, condemns the illegal statement made by the President of the United States of America on the 25th of March, a statement made about the legal status of the occupied Syrian Golan. My country's government considers that piece of paper signed by President Trump on that date and offered as a gift to the Prime Minister of the occupying authority is a unilateral statement by one party which has neither the political legitimacy, legal or moral legitimacy to make such a decision and decide the destiny of other peoples of the world or the lands and to whom they would belong, land that in this case belongs to my country, the Syrian Republic. They cannot make such proclamations. These American practices are dangerous. They're dangerous because they represent a blind and unprecedented tendency of this administration to twist international policy, humiliate the United Nations, and run roughshod over all resolutions of this Council and the General Assembly with regard to the Arab-Israeli conflict, as to the unavoidable need of putting an end to the Israeli occupation of the Arab lands going back to 4 June 1967. In Resolution 479 of 1981, a resolution which you all referenced in your statements, in this resolution 497, it recognized that this land, the Golan, is the occupied and that all the Israeli occupation of the territory and the measures taken are null and void and have no legal effect. Everyone in this council, including that member representing the United States, recognizes that the peace process in the Middle East was launched in 1991 based on the relevant resolutions 497, 242, and 380, all of which stipulate the illegality of seizing land by force and not recognizing Israel's sovereignty, which is an occupying power over any of the lands occupied since the 5th of June 1967. These resolutions also reference the need to put an end to the Israeli occupation of these lands as a sine qua non condition for restoring comprehensive and fair peace to the Middle East. This is a legal issue which no U.S. administration in the past has denied. No American administration in the past has denied these references. I repeat that. Until this administration. And as I just said, ladies and gentlemen, a piece of paper signed by the U.S. president and offered with a pen to Netanyahu before the world is unilateral behavior which has no legal or political value. This unilateral behavior, which is also clear evidence of the fact that the U.S. administration does not give any weight to the United Nations. It's withdrawing its recognition of the international body, and today the administration is refusing and running counter to all efforts trying to restore peace in the Middle East, which means that the U.S. administration is declaring the end of its role as a mediator for the peace process in the Middle East and is sounding the bell to that effect and is increasing escalation and confrontation in the area. This is a serious crossroads we find ourselves at, both for the United Nations and the international community. This U.S. proclamation is a slap in the face to the entire world, given the historical and true role of the United Nations and the Security Council, since the Security Council is first and foremost responsible for maintaining international peace and security and to defend international peace and life, to defend the Charter, the references and international legal heritage accumulated over decades based on the refusal of recognition of the Israeli occupation of the Golan and condemnation of this occupation is a call to put an end to it definitively. And my country heartily applauds all of those statements which followed to reject what the U.S. administration proclaimed. My country would also thank all those countries who supported the holding of this meeting, which is very important. We see in the positions taken and the statements made by the majority of governments in the world and also by the majority of members of the Council, a serious and important step in the direction, the right direction, showing that world public opinion is isolating the United States and Israel, that they are operating outside international law and they are a direct threat to international peace and security.
Madam President,
let's be clear and let's be direct. The United States, in its illegal proclamation made by its president, is running against its commitments under the Charter, under the principles of international law and Security Council resolution, knowing that the United States is a permanent member of the Council. One should bear that in mind. And since the U.S. delegation is pleased in its statement to talk about violations of international law or breach of international law, well, the crucial question here, the question that we ask with vehemence today is the following. Who is going to ask the United States to be held accountable for the violations of the Security Council resolutions 338, 242, and 497? Is the United Nations not supposed to deal with these flagrant violations of these resolutions by recovering its role and legal mandate, which was taken away by the United States, and this with a view to implementing your resolutions 338 and 497? In the eyes of the people of the Syrian Arab Republic, the United States is a country which is now an enemy. It's outside the law. It is occupying part of our land. After a direct involvement in the murder of millions of Syrians and destroying our economy, our natural resources, and our infrastructure. Moreover, be it by supporting terrorism or by imposing an economic embargo or military aggression, direct aggression against our country, the United States has led the so-called international coalition against the OEL and signed a paper that is a threat to international peace and security. This was an attempt to manipulate history and geography, as the former deceased President Charles de Gaulle said, and the U.S. president is an extremist and an enemy, and believed mistakenly that the terrorist war against Syria would be enough to break the will of the people of our country, or that 8 years of fighting extremism and terrorism would be enough to change Syria's priorities and the priorities of its government, its people, and its army. Ladies and gentlemen, members of the Council, Madam President, the issue that we're looking at now goes to the very conscience of mankind and goes back to the inspirations of lasting peace. And so here the matter is, have we closely contemplated the real consequences of the United States occupation, a permanent member of this Council, and significant host of the United Nations in its country, contemplating the true consequences of this breach by the United States, which is a permanent member of the Council, of obligations incumbent upon it by your resolutions? Have we looked at the real reasons behind the violations of international agreements and conventions to guarantee international peace and security? Have we looked at its withdrawal from international agreements such as the Human Rights Council, UNESCO, or other agencies, or its lack of its withdrawal of financing for UNRWA, for example? These are questions which I bring to you, ladies and gentlemen of the Council. The U.S. administration is trying to protect its Israeli friends, but there's a real risk here for international peace and security, especially because the Israeli occupation continues. Given the rejected and fictional stories that abound, which undermine the stability of this region, or by creating wars and chaos, which would lead to a loss of all control in the area. Today we are describing facts which are indisputable. You know, no doubt, that those who fabricate, manufacture wars and fuel them in the world is a party that does not respect international law, and we cannot trust responsibility for international peace and security to that country. If the Security Council had dealt with the destruction of Iraq from the very beginning, we would not be in this unprecedented situation of today of complete disdain for international law, for Security Council and GA resolutions with regard to international peace and security. Ultimately, UN action vis-a-vis American dangerous actions will leave people under occupation with just one choice, which is the principle of using force. It will be the only way to restore peace is by force. This is because of the inaction displayed given the situation. The Syrian Arab Golan is ours. It will come back to us. Don't be misguided by thinking that one day this land will be yours due to hypocrisy or due to being a pawn in an electoral game, a game where you bring each other support so that the Israelis can succeed in their elections and so that the Americans can also get support from the Israeli lobbying groups in the United States. The American administration may want to show some generosity vis-a-vis the Israelis, and if they wish to do so, we would invite them to not put their hands on what doesn't belong to them. The U.S. is endowed with lands which extend far and wide. Give those states to the Israelis, for example. You could give them North and South Carolina, for example. Why not? South Carolina is a great piece of land. In fact, this has been encouraged by some. So give them a state or two in the United States. Give Israel a couple of states if this administration really wants to have Israeli support. By way of conclusion, Madam President, my country's delegation rejects all attempts by the representative of Germany, and note, I said the representative of Germany and not of the German regime, because it would be shameful to say representative of a regime in this environment. So we reject any attempts by the representative of Germany to try and make this meeting deviate from its purpose and main subject. This is not up to its capacity as a diplomat and capacity as a member of the Security Council or the protocol of speeches vis-a-vis my country. My country is a founding nation of the United Nations. In other words, we were victorious against the Nazis, dear colleagues. The United Nations organizations arose from the ashes of the Second World War, which caused the death of 85 million people due to a poor reading of politics by your country, dear friend, colleague from Germany. A war which today, like your political reading, which is incorrect against my country, and incorrect with regard to the purpose of this meeting. I will not extend my remarks. I just wish to say that you've brought shame to your own country. I have spent years in this organization, and it is shameful that we cannot communicate based on the legal rules that, or that we would not respect the rules of procedure here. Thank you.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.